You good?
Cuéntanos.
Cool, man. All right. Mate, thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's cool to be here. And
thanks, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having a chat and drinking some Michelada.
Yeah, we might start throwing some Spanish words out there. So see how you go. 100%.
Well, I can
usually
them
gets
for
better
you
after a few drinks, man. So. I can assure you that.
Not always for me, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see. You can correct me if I mess anything.
No worries. It's part of it. It's part of the episode.
We do a lot of Spanglish here as well. So
good. Yeah, that's my I'm fluent in that. That's definitely my proficiency.
Man, we been chatting for a while now, but I guess one thing that I was telling you before is that I can come in and try to explain what is it that you do and who you are, but I think it's best if it comes from you ultimately. I was keen to know, like, who are you?
Great question. I still grapple with this, but I think the reason that I'm here is, like, I'm a creative. I work as an artist and an illustrator. Aside from that, I am Australian dude, Indian heritage. Australian dude, Indian heritage.
Nice.
Yeah, moved to Australia when I was like 10. I live here in Melbourne now via a lot of other places and cities. I've had the pleasure of like traveling.
And you were saying that at the conference, right? We met at the Brisbane conference.
At the design conference, that's right.
First time in Brisbane for me. And then you were saying that you've been traveling quite a bit before coming back to Melbourne. Like, how many places you can remember you've been to?
I took the scenic route home. Definitely. Oh, yeah. So it's been 3 or 4 places. So, yeah, I've just really liked kind of being an expat for a really long time.
Nice.
And so that's why it's sort of dragged out for so long. So, yeah, went from Melbourne and then New York for 4 years and then Tokyo for 2 years and then Amsterdam for 4 years and now
so like
back
very,
here.
Very creative cities, right?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, like any city has the capacity to be creative. They are absolutely, you know, international cities. They're massive hubs for places. But I think one of the cool things about being in these countries is that it gives you this exposure to like this culture that's not immediately native to you and around you constantly. And I think, especially like places like Europe or even the United States, you know, you have this access to all these like different areas that are, you know, really, really close to travel to. So I think exposing myself to that was probably the biggest reason for doing a lot of that travel. It's been really nice to come home though. I think Australia's a really cool country.
It's a beautiful place. Absolutely.
I mean, you know.
You were born in Sydney?
No, I was born in Delhi.
I was born in
India.
Why do
we
keep coming back to Sydney? I think I mentioned that.
I'm from Sydney. Oh, so I grew up in Sydney.
Nobody on this table is from Australia.
That's also
Venezuela,
the joys of Australia,
Mexico,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Yeah.
All immigrants, we share that.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, I feel like once you've done that first step to move to a different country, it's a lot easier to then go and, you know, start from scratch, let's call it that way. It's more of a common idea in your mind, you know. I feel like if you're not used to moving to a different country, it can be a bit jarring for people.
I think I agree. I think the first time is like definitely the most jarring. Like, I don't know how it was for you guys. I think for me it was like easier every time we did it because I had someone to do it with. So I had my wife and she was like, if she's game, like it's so different if you're trying to move to a new country by yourself and you don't know anyone.
100%.
You don't speak the language. You don't know like what the basic things are. I don't know how it was. How was it for you guys?
Did you travel to these other countries speaking the language?
No,
like,
not
did you
at all.
Japan is like,
no, didn't know anyone. Didn't speak the language.
Just throw yourself in the
deep end. Just exactly.
Nice.
Yeah. I think, and it was, I mean, it was an amazing experience. I learned the most about myself living in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, definitely introduced to those like limits and comfort zones were constantly being challenged. And there's a lot of culture shock as well. But I think
when were you in Japan?
In Tokyo.
Did you go to the fish market?
Oh yeah.
Is it as crazy
Tsukiji,
as
Tsukiji? Oh yeah. So they've so Tsukiji's fish market is amazing. The thing is, like, in the lead up to the Olympics, they relocated it. It's not in sort of near.
How can you relocate a fish market?
They did it because it's been around for a really long time, that like old fish market. Yeah, and it had all the character of like all these really charming and sometimes aggressive fishmongers. Yeah. But it's a sight and experience.
I've heard stories about like you have to get, as a tourist, you have to get up early and get there early. Oh, yeah. And then like limited capacity.
It's not a limit. Yeah, it's like this limited capacity if you want to go to like the auction, like the tuna auctions, are like the.
The big but
ones. Yeah.
They go for millions, right?
Yeah, of yen, yeah, but like it's insane. Like, yeah, people spend a lot of money on
million yen, you said
tuna, yeah, millions of yen, no, but it like depends. I mean, amazing, like, it's such a great place to learn about like quality of ingredients. Like, I don't know, like, I love food specifically, and my goodness, it was like
great
the most
to
fun
be
to be. I mean, most fun to, like, to eat there and, like...
It seems like Japan as well, I mean, food-wise, if you think about it, they've been outside Japan. And, you know, everywhere you go in the world, you can eat, you know, Japanese food. It's so well-known.
Yeah.
That's one thing that fascinates me about their culture is that it kind of, you know, whether it's food, whether it's television, anime, like, there are so many things about Japan that have gone out of the world, been exported to, you know? Like, even growing up, I feel like... I've got some Japanese references, you know.
For sure.
In my
absolutely.
Life, you know, early growing up. So it's like, it's just fascinating to me. It's just that.
It's like, it's like such a fascinating thing because it is like, geographically speaking, like quite a small country. And like to have so many kind of amazing things of notoriety. Like, I think of karaoke, which is like just such a fun thing.
Exactly.
Like,
you love karaoke. I can't get on board with karaoke.
No, it's so much fun.
It is good. It is. I didn't like it until, you know, I got introduced to it and I was like,
Exactly. We're going to karaoke after this.
We have to. Yeah, done. But, you know, I'm curious as well because obviously you don't just go there for. You know, short periods of time. It sounds like, you know, you've been spending years in each one of these cities and countries. Was there an underlying reason apart from just like exploring?
Oh yeah, I think I love traveling to new places and like putting myself in different positions, but you know, if you have the luxury of being able to stay somewhere for longer and to experience a place like a local, like, that is to me the most exciting way to travel is to you know, is to experience a city like a local. For me, what I look forward to the most whenever I visit a city is not necessarily to like check off the like must-see church or like the like
or the
museum that
stuff.
I mean, yeah, it sounds really wanky and like, oh, look at how like cool I am. But like, it's more that I don't have the patience to stand in line to get into,
see a
landmark that is, I'm sure, really impressive. But I think what fascinates me the most about these places is the people, because it's, you know, they have a different routine and a different lifestyle. And, you know, everything in their day to day is different, you know. Sure, we still have, you know, a similarly structured day where we might have, you know, a couple of meals a day, but the food that they eat and the people that they interact with and the
like
means
local
of transport and the 100%. Things that they see, like, those are the things
like
that
you could be an Airbnb ambassador, man. That's exactly what they say.
Yeah.
Like,
not sponsored.
Yeah. Have you ever worked with them?
I have done a project with them.
Part of your contract was to keep talking about the
still contractually obligated.
What did you do for
I did, it's actually really cool. It's like when I was living in Tokyo, and it was with Koto, who's a branding agency, and they commissioned a series of travel posters.
Nice.
Inspired by like the vintage travel posters, you know, those like ones that you see in a travel agent. And so I was really lucky because it was while I was living in Tokyo, and they were like, we'd love for you to create a poster about Tokyo. And
who said that? The Koto studio?
Yeah, Koto. Like,
is it
kind of
like a happy
Yeah, that's them. Yeah, they're really cool.
How did you come across them? I said, oh, how did they come across you?
I couldn't tell you. I think, you know, part of it was luck, but probably more sincerely, part of it was a really good friend of mine, Ravi, was working there as a designer.
Yeah, right.
And might have put me forward. And yeah, I think, you know,
made the match and happen.
The rest is, yeah, sort of history. And then, you know, it kind of went on to have a really nice life about it, this poster, which, you know, it was really touching to be able to create, a poster for the city I was living in.
Of course.
And yeah. I think also because I'm not, you know, I felt really self-conscious about it at the time because I'm like, I'm not Japanese, but at the same time, I was also in a really unique position that I could convey Tokyo as an expat or as a visitor
You kind of get both views, right?
Yeah.
As a visitor, but also you've been living there.
Exactly. Your skills
to work.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you have this amazing poster.
Well, especially in a way that you're also like embracing the city, you know, you're embracing it as a local.
Exactly.
So you do get a different view. You're not going to go with the cheesy stuff. You know, you're not going to do a poster about the cheesy stuff about the city.
I hope not.
So naturally, it's like, it's a perfect
thing. Now I'm like thinking about what I did and hopefully it's not cheesy. I'll have to ask you guys after.
What is it like Mount Fuji? That's it.
Mount Fuji and some cherry blossoms. And it was actually really cool. It was like an alleyway. And so... Japan's like sort of famous for these really narrow alleyways, and they have like all these like signs that sit out amongst one another and overlap. Yeah. And so it was like a kind of collage of different neon signs of different signs for food, and it was like a karaoke sign and something for Odin.
Easter eggs there that you left, like your name in Japanese or something.
You know, I think that would have been a bad idea if I decided to sneak that in, because I think they would have been like, what's that? Because it was, it went on to be on their, so the CEO of Airbnb used Ryan it in Hesky. This, like, yeah, he used it in this, like, presentation on stage for one of their big, I don't know, announcements, and there it was. So I think they would have been a little bit upset.
You know, when they don't give me data, so when Alan and I are designing something and then they don't give me the real name or the real whatever.
Okay.
For numbers, I use like key dates for me.
Okay.
So I put my birthday there.
Okay.
So if I gotta mark up a screen of a phone, it says it says like 1804.
Okay.
Or if I run out of numbers, I start putting in like maybe Alice's birthday or my wife's birthday.
Yeah, okay. I do that every now and then. But only I laugh about the joke, it's like a joke on me, nobody finds out.
It's like a little...
Yeah. But you know, I've confused before, like in front of clients, like presentations, like, oh yeah, that's cool. Nobody's referring to that. I was like, oh, by the way, guys, just so you know. This is like three presentations.
Yeah,
this, like, there's a relationship.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. Yeah, I think there's definitely things that you should put in.
Who does that as well?
Well, I did put in that case, because a really good friend of mine who like is Japanese and was living in Tokyo, his family owns a Oden shop, which is like a traditional Japanese like fish cake stew,
so
one of the signs that I did was a Oden sign, and I was like, oh, that's you know, uniquely old school Japanese as well. It's like, it's not super common for, you know, a lot of people will go to Japan and have like, you know, teriyaki chicken and katsu okonomiyaki, but not as many people have Oden, which is like a very old fashioned, like Japanese kind of style of food. So definitely embrace this idea of like putting in a little connection.
Next Nike project, a little bit about you in there.
You know.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, yeah. Now like, I'm thinking, what would I put in? I don't think Nike's going to commission
anything. What are you working on now?
A lot of things.
What can you say? What did you sign on with blood that you?
This is the thing. Like, to be honest, most projects just come with that, and I think inherently a lot of people are very protective about that, and I respect that. But I think most recently, it's definitely been a kind of time where I'm like reassessing my own style a lot and trying new mediums. I think for me, what I try to do like every year is try and like challenge myself and learn something new or you know, try a new technique or just question something.
Is it always digital?
Usually, but lately it's been like quite a little bit more you know, tactile and wanting to take things off the screen as much as possible. I think that's always my objective, is like, as much as the production side and making things is always going to be digital, it's always nice, or it's always ideal and preferred to take things off the screen as much as possible.
Yeah, it makes
sense. Because it gives them this presence, you know, and I think because I constantly work digitally, any opportunity I get to have a physical, tangible version of the work is...
Yeah. Man, because I think Ali mentioned this previously, and your style... talked about it before, the evolution of Karan, right? The style, I call it evolution. You might call it something else, but...
No, I call it...
And off the camera, you know, we're talking about, you know, back in the computer arts magazine, the
computer
style,
arts, oh yeah.
Yeah, that style that it was, now we look at it, it might be a bit cheesy, but you started somewhere there.
Yeah.
And then you move into something more simplistic, minimalistic, and now you're using a new technique. But how do you, man, like, you keep evolving, right? But you obviously, some people start looking at your work for the style that you have, and then all of a sudden you're like,
switching. Yeah, there's a couple of approaches here, where it's like some of my favorite artists and like illustrators keep doing the same style, and I love that about them. You know, one of my favorite artists is a Dutch artist named Para, and he's kind of known for using a similar kind of color palette, these blues and these reds and these whites, and I love him for that. For me, I think one of the things that sort of defines me is that I'm immensely like impatient, and I think I constantly have to figure out a new way to do something, or if ever anything, technically speaking, feels formulaic and the journey feels too easy or too set in stone, then I'm like, oh, let's take like a right turn here and see what happens.
Take the next step.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting as well. I think about you and I recognize your style, you know, but I feel like, you know, you kind of in this process of evolving as well.
Yeah.
You're still keeping some kind of, you know, pattern, some kind of language to your work, you know? Do you feel like you have to be restricted to that in a way and kind of be honest to the work doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, I think, like, oftentimes I'll get, like, asked to do a specific kind of thing and... You know,
they send you a screenshot of your Instagram. It's like, "Can you do this?"
For instance, like a style that I did a long time ago, which people like, I'm not really doing as much anymore. And people might be like, "Hey, can you like, can you do something
like that?
Style, can you do this?" Yeah,
yeah.
And sometimes it's like, sometimes I like, you know, I usually consider it based on like what the ask is and who it's for and what it's for and why. And sometimes you do feel a little pigeonholed, I think, but that's just human nature. You know, people just, it's just something innately human that people want to classify people and say, oh, that's the person who would be, you know, for bright colors, or for, you know, in my case it's like, oh, pattern, or a simple illustration, or something minimal, or something bold, or something colorful, and that makes sense. You know, I think that when people commission illustration or any kind of work, they're like, okay, I need the best person suited for this brief. Does it make breaking out of that challenging? Absolutely. But I think that, you know, it has to be, it would, I think, you know, taking a step back to like, you know, this question of evolution, I think, like, while some of my favorite artists might have a consistent visual style, conceptually their ideas have always evolved, and so they've probably started dealing with different ideas. Whereas conversely, like for me, I would say I still kind of try and conceptually deal with similar ideas, but the visual language has changed.
It must be hard as well, because you mentioned one of your, I think it was a blog or something. I'm going to try to quote you here.
Okay. Oh, God. How old is this? I haven't kept a blog in a long time.
No, I think it's going to resonate. You say something about being proud of putting your name on it before it goes out. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
And that really resonated with me. I was like, that's pretty powerful. You know, like, you want to put something out there, is it good enough? Then you got to ask yourself, would I put, oh, that's it, would I put my name on it? You said something like, you said, Karen, I remember
that. Yeah, okay. Shit, I'm in trouble now, because yeah. I think then, like, I've maybe, how do you guys feel about this? Like, you, I think maybe I've, like, softened a bit, because I know that not every single thing I make is going to be a banger, you know?
Man,
and
I see you just got it.
And there are just...
I'm saying, like, everything you put out there makes me feel bad about what I put out there.
No, it's not like that. But I think it's more just accepting the, like, oh, you know what? Yeah. Just draw a line under it. Yeah. This one didn't work out like you thought.
That's very tricky, though. I still you know, fight with that idea a lot, because I guess, you know, at some point you just have to give. And you have to be okay with just letting go.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like that moment kind of never arrives, you know? Even when I release something, it's out there in the world, I'm still questioning. I'm still kind of, you know, giving myself a hard time for not doing specific things.
Are you
things,
the kind of person to, like, take the work down after a couple of months, you're like, oh, I hate that, I'm going to take it down? I don't want people to see that.
I never take it down, but do you?
You ever take?
Very occasionally, I will be like, I just don't.
Why did I put that out there?
Not why did I put that out there? I was like,
what was I thinking?
I get it, but I'm trying to be less precious about it as well. Okay. Now, like, I think.
Nice.
Is that like social pressure, or more like yourselves thinking about the work and being like, that cannot be associated with me?
I think probably the original rationale behind taking it down is the social pressure, and then eventually maturing to the point that you're like, not everything's gonna be perfect, like,
right,
allow yourself to have those in there.
Cut yourself some slack.
Because you know, not every time you're not gonna nail it every single time. Yeah. And I think it, you know, it serves as, like, and I'm thinking purely about social media in this sense. Yeah, it's like,
I think naturally
it should be a sort of sketchbook. I think it's actually funny you say that, because
that's interesting.
Excuse me, you can edit that out. The last full time job I had, and I remember it was like my leaving party, and my creative director Jonathan said to me, he's like, you know, it's really interesting to see you, like, pushing your work out there on Instagram, and I said, oh, this, sometimes it's really bad though. He's like, yeah, but it's, like, nice to see that you're human, you know. It's nice to see that you're it's nice to see that you you don't always get it, and that's part of the exploration, and that's part of the journey, is, like, sometimes you will take a wrong turn.
Yeah.
But the thing is that that's part of the journey, that's part of the exploration. So there's no need to, like, sort of hide it and masquerade that every single thing is going to be...
It's going
to
be perfect. Perfect.
Sometimes it's going to be shit. And, even lately it's like, oh, you know, measuring the value of some work based on how many likes or things that it gets isn't...
Oh, well.
How many Easter you get for that one?
I mean, it's toxic. It's a shit way of measuring metrics, because, you know... You might just, like, spend a really nice amount of time exploring this thing, and then be really proud of it, and then having, you know, a social media platform decide that this work isn't worth anything is like, not right. And I think, you know, oftentimes it's like, oh, it's maybe the algorithm that isn't right, and maybe it still is a good work. And I think that you know, setting that aside, especially if you work, like, independently, especially if you don't work immediately around other peers.
Man, you were saying before, like, you used to work out of your place up until, like, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I think we all did, but at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is that a lot of people are part of a team or an agency.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like a network. Whereas you, it's just you and your iPad, or, you know, whatever you work on.
My friend.
Your best friend.
What do you use an iPad, right?
Like a Wacom, but, like, I mean, you know, before I moved back to Australia, I had, like, a shared, worked in a shared studio, and that was really nice. I think it's more, like, for me, working in isolation, it's actually funny, because I like working around other people, because they keep me kind of, like,
in check and like accountable, exactly. Where, you know, they're working, so I'm like, I should work, whereas working from home is like,
it's just you and against you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the fridge and YouTube and
you find so many things to do at home.
Exactly.
Watching this episode on
Yeah, exactly. Just getting the views up.
Yeah.
So I think, it's like, it's tricky. Yeah, and because I work in isolation, I say isolation. You know, I have, you know, there's people who are on my team.
You work with massive brands, right? So. Apple and Nike and Airbnb, you said before.
Sure.
Recently, I think you share LA Times. That you work with the design director as well. And you have to manage expectations from those established brands.
Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming here, but this is why are you here, right? We're asking you.
Yeah.
How do you manage that and also keep it true to who you are and your style and, you know?
I mean, I imagine it's very much similar to you guys. Like, if you get a project in, you know, it's... I think every project is an opportunity for you to... I don't know. It's like, it's a test. It's like a race. And you're like, what's my time going to be on this race? And, you know, how good is it going to be? And I think I treat kind of each of these opportunities as like a new opportunity to do something good and... I always find like the most challenging like stage to be the first part, which is like you're sussing each other out. Do you guys have this when you work where you're like I'm trying to manage expectations, like you said, I'm trying to understand what their expectations are.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's sort of the
you mean like the first couple of meetings or presentation?
The first presentation is the barometer where you're just like oh, I've done this and they were expecting this or they share feedback.
It's
like this
on Zoom as well, like on a virtual meeting, like camera off, mic off, you don't know what the reaction is, you know, if you're doing a good job.
It's like it's where cool.
Is this going?
So I think it's always that's that initial first blind date in a way. It's like it's like I don't know.
You
know what the outcome's
going to be. They've asked me to come up with ideas. My ideas might be awesome or awful. And sure, like I get used to it by doing it more often. Yeah. But it's still the like, most challenging. It's still.
I think that's Simon. Thank you very much.
I think that's been great. It's been great.
Let's get around the shots. Let's go.
I love that he was like, hey, make sure to turn off all your phones and stuff.
Yeah.
It's always the cameraman.
He told the kitchen to stop cooking.
Hey guys, stop cooking. Turn the music.
We'll pretend like nothing happened.
What happened? But no, I think it's like, I always use it as an opportunity to like, it's the new relationship and
it's exciting. I find that very exciting sometimes because it's like it's a blank canvas, right?
Exactly.
And I think both parties are interested in a good outcome. Yeah. And then, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, but as soon as someone gives you a brief, do you get ideas like come into your mind right away?
Sometimes I think sometimes I do. Especially if I'm on a call, like especially if I have a call and they're like, and they've, you know, shared visual references and they've got ideas and they're like, this is the direction we want to take it in.
They start sparking
and
something.
Start explaining the brief to you.
Yeah. Which is, but like, interestingly, like I've been doing a lot more editorial work, which I find really challenging. And that's why I'm like almost forcing myself to do it because it's putting myself in like a position where,
printed, by the way? Like this piece of work that
the LA Times. I think that was digital. I think that one was digital.
You've been sharing some, like the Peel one.
Oh, that was the New York Times. Yeah.
Yeah, and that one. I mean, you obviously had to switch RGB to CMYK, right?
I think they managed all the color.
Did, but still, your super bright colors is completely different on screen as opposed to on paper.
Yeah.
So that's that must be like. You have to make peace with that as well.
No, I mean, that's in the grand scheme of things, a small battle to fight. it's more just like when you have an idea that you love and you're like really going into bat for it. But I think part of it is like, it's, are not part of it. A big part of it is the collaborative nature of a lot of these things. Yep. I think it's like, you know, communication is always key. It's like you're feedbacking with an art director or a client or a brand. And I really enjoy that. I really enjoy the direction and working with people. And, you know, obviously good. They're stepping in and they're like, okay, we think you're good for this and we want you to take it in this direction. And that's a good starting point. I don't like open briefs because...
Yeah.
You don't?
I don't like open briefs because I think it's just too... It's too broad. And I think oftentimes when I get an open brief, then you often share it with a client and they're like, oh, I imagined something completely different. And I was like, well, that's why I asked. Like, you know, like,
it's so vague that, it's actually hard to set an expectation on something that's so vague.
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, it's your interpretation of the brief. Right?
Absolutely.
And then the other party that's waiting for your work should have no expectation besides just whatever you think is best.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't happen that way, you know? Yeah. Like, that's more the theory on paper. I feel like it kind of goes the other way.
But exactly. Like, I think that this is, again, like, the gift of this first round is this, like, meeting of the minds in the middle. And you're like, you went crazy.
Are you, like, a one-concept guy or, like, five concepts?
No. I usually do multiple. I try to come up with a couple of different approaches to an idea.
Yeah.
So it's doesn't like necessarily one idea but different approaches as opposed to five different ideas.
No, it might be five different ideas. Oh, it might be
so creative.
But it might be five different, like, I think there's, like, you know, especially, with a campaign, it's quite easy to interpret something in a range of different ways because, you know, you might decide to focus on one detail and make that the kind of crux of the project and then build a world around that. And any project might have three or four of these, you know, deeply rooted ideas that you can build a world around. And it's all about emphasis. It's like, well, what is the kind of strategy for the client and what are they trying to push or what is the main message of this campaign? And I think that's where it is. It's just, weighting the emphasis in different places and then creating concepts based on that.
I don't know why my mind went there, but it'll be funny if one day we're looking for an illustrator on Fiverr and then Karan comes up.
I don't think that's ever going to happen, man.
I really hope that doesn't happen. There are people who do
it's like a guest appearance, you know. Like you can see Karan on big stage, maybe, or you can find him once a year on Fiverr.
Maybe sort of a collaboration with Fiverr. I think that's more collaboration.
But what I'm saying is, like, it'll be really funny one day. It just pops up. It's like, what?
But I think you can actually already commission. You can already commission people to do my style on Fiverr.
Really? Yeah. Like someone's actually copying your style.
It's pretty rampant in illustration. Yeah.
Interesting.
How do you feel about that?
Interesting.
Oh, God! How much time do you have?
I feel like that could be a whole episode, but I'm really intrigued by this.
Yeah.
Like,
look, I think there's different phases to it. You know, I think that young artists have to, I've got to be really careful what I say here.
Turn the camera on.
No, I think there's a time and place to replicate things, and that is probably when you're learning, but when it gets to a point where you're earning money off of someone's,
You
know,
it's your work.
Signature
it's
your style.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying me possessively, I'm just saying... Any kind of plagiarism or counterfeiting.
Once you find out that the handle, Instagram handle, is not made by Karan, it's like too close, too close.
You know, and I think to a certain degree, every designer and artist and illustrator or creative has had to deal with being on either the receiving or the giving end of the stick, where we've been put in situations, and I think those are all learning experiences, you know, because...
it's okay to be inspired by someone you admire.
Yeah, as long as you make it your own.
Making a buck out of that's what it is.
I want to emphasize that, like, no one's going to get it right throughout, and I sure as hell haven't through my own career and through working, at agencies as well, and you know, but I think that I think that there is something that you learn to appreciate more as you get, you know, more involved in the scene or more involved in the community, and you're like, actually, this is really realize you appreciate the amount of work and the nature of the work. And yeah, I think the craft is it's what defines us, right? It's especially I don't know, especially
for, man.
Well, this is why, you know, sometimes we get upset when we get negative feedback, is because it's so, the work is so personal, and I think that's more upsetting, is not like, oh, someone's made a buck off it. It's more that someone has, it's someone's like sort of milked my, I don't know, there's something that's really personal to me and replicated. It's like, yo, this is one of the things
it
that...
It is you. It's an extension of you. That's your work.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't help but feel like overly attached and obviously upset sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's interesting as well.
Sometimes it's just really funny
when it happens. Well, I was going to say, you can look at it different ways.
Really?
You can
either
think really offensive.
Some of it's really funny.
It's, you know, it's nice that someone wants to copy my work, you know? If you were thinking it from that perspective too, you know? But it also goes to show that you have obviously created your own signature. And I think, you know, would you... thing that I've always wondered is, like, that's a process. Like,
sure.
Like, that doesn't happen overnight. Was there ever a point where you were 100% confident that you have found that style?
Yeah, I think when I really started exploring pattern is when I found that I found a style that would keep me engaged and excited for a really long time. And it did keep me excited for a really long time. And it still does. Because up until the point that I started working mostly with patterns, my style was really eclectic. I was like jumping between different treatments and different,
that's part of the process, right?
Yeah. And it was interesting because up until then I was like, I'm just going to be a designer who doesn't have a style. And
not
then
really.
I found a style and I was like, oh, of course, exactly.
Right.
So anyway, I have a style now.
Never evolving. So you're like a Pokemon. Like,
yeah, exactly. I don't know what phase I'm at now.
Faster, stronger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you basically that kind of goes back to a little bit to, you know, the project, the Quickies.
Yes.
Was that kind of the beginning of? Was that at the time where you were like, I'm a designer, I'm kind of doing this work, I'm not too sure where I want to go. What's the incentive?
Yeah, so the Quickies were from back in 2010, 9 or 10.
Yeah.
So in 10 seconds, can you explain what Quickies are?
Yeah,
we don't go that route.
Yeah, just before people think of...
Just jump to mind.
Yeah. 10 seconds. Okay. Daily illustration project, set myself an hour time limit of creating one illustration a day for a year.
Nice.
And
that's the elevator pitch. Love it, man.
And I think it came out of a couple of reasons. Firstly, it was like I had started or returned to freelance after a while and found myself either A, with a lot of work and work that I didn't necessarily love doing, but did because I had to make ends meet. And
you gotta pay the bills, man.
Absolutely. And the other reason was that, one was like I wasn't making the work I wanted to make, so this was a way for me to reclaim some sort of like, you know, I'm like, creative. Yeah, I'm still doing something for myself.
You went through a process yourself like that, but sorry, carry on.
Yeah, so and then the other reason was like
been interviewed.
I know, but I want to hear these like stories as well. Like
it'll happen, man. Don't worry.
Okay. And I think the other was either then I didn't have enough work and I was like, fuck, I need to do I gotta do something with the time that I've got, and so I just started making something, and like it was really fun because conceptually it like challenged me to think really intensely and come up with funny puns or combining visually strong ideas.
Also, it was meant to be funny as well.
It was always intended to be lighthearted because an hour is not enough time to make anything. And I think the other thing is
that,
like,
makes me nervous already thinking about it. Like, you only have 1 hour to produce something that's going to stick.
Were you very strict there?
I was. So yeah, it was like line work, Illustrator always, because Illustrator is like my, I was the most proficient with Illustrator. I was really fast in it, so I knew it was possible. And yeah, line work.
And you stuck to those rules all the time.
And I stuck to those rules, and it was a consistent series. And
nice.
You're like, you know, look, I said, that's it.
Yeah, whatever happens.
Yeah, it's like, and again, it made me be comfortable with saying, okay, this one was terrible.
Yeah.
And there were some horrible puns. There were some really bad puns.
I mean, I love puns, man.
I mean, they were, yeah, but you don't like puns that much. So that's like, you're ruining puns for me.
Yeah.
And then there were some really good ones. And then some days I was like, I can't think of anything. So what do I, should I do like a letter or just do something for the sake of doing it? And even those days were great because I still did something for me.
Mm.
But I think out of that, I realized that I actually really like kind of these smile in the mind ideas where I combine two different objects or two ideas to create this metaphor. And, you know, while visually, you know, the style has changed, I still use like a lot of the principles from that in a lot of my work where, you know, even now I'm like with the most recent, like more hyper-realistic stuff that I'm doing, they would still very much work as quickies. Like, conceptually, you know, they would still absolutely work with as quickies in line work because I'm still dealing with the same funny or kind of smile-in-the-mind style ideas, which
What do you design on these days in terms of software?
Usually use Cinema 4D, which is a 3D program.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Still use Illustrator a lot.
After Effects. So you combine them, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, these programs are made to talk to each other. So, so yeah, they shouldn't... I mean, you can use them...
progression, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And me just wanting to find, like, easier ways to do something or ways to iterate faster.
And you got into NFTs as well, right?
Yeah, so, like... No, not a touchy. Again, how long do you have?
Well, food is coming, man. So we'll be dictated by that. Don't worry.
Yeah, look, it was a really strange time to be an artist last year. I think that you know, my background as a digital artist started from 2004, 2005. And I was part of these online art collectives and online art communities where we were already making digital art and putting them out as exhibitions, you know.
Yeah.
So basically, we were already making NFTs, just not
NFTs.
Not with that title.
It's just a digital release.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, last time it was like, last year it was like, there was this gold rush, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there were a few... There's a lot of issues with it, you know, I think.
Mm.
You know, on one hand, it was a really exciting premise where, you know, digital artists especially, finally had a way to make money off their work, which was really cool.
Yeah.
But there were also a lot of cons about it, you know.
Environmental. A lot of scams as well.
A lot of scams. The audience also is a, you know, really interesting group who is not something... Ooh, nice. Thank you. The audience itself is also just, like, dramatically different from a traditional art audience. And I think, yeah, it poses an interesting challenge. I feel like it's definitely, like, one of those situations where it's, like, watch this space and see what happens.
Yeah, 100%. It's still very early days for it to... you know, in the greater scheme of things, I feel like it's just one of those things that... It's really exciting, but the nature of it also allows for a lot of uncertainty and scams and things that are not, you know, like, I'm not saying that it should have established parameters, but to a certain degree it should be a little bit more controlled and easier.
This is the sad thing now, though, sorry to interrupt, but like
no.
The thing I was trying to get at is now, like, nobody wants to hear the three letters NFT anymore because it's just been like dragged and scammed, and there's like actual use cases for scenario use case scenarios for NFTs beyond just art.
100%. Like, which and, are and I think great.
And I, which are actually
the technology allows for so much.
Yeah, and the problem is like, you know, there's all these grifters and scam artists who've jumped on board, and now it's like, nobody wants to use the phrase anymore, and it's a shame. I get it. Like, I get why people don't want to be associated with it. But it's almost like a disservice to like the potential of the technology. So yeah, that's kind of shit as well.
Like,
you know.
You know, it's interesting too, because it seems like that gold rush you were mentioning before kind of happened because people didn't want to miss out on this new thing, and therefore there was just this massive hype around it.
Sure.
Without really knowing what it was, what it meant. I think, you know, you kind of came from a little bit more of established what would I call that? It's just, you know, you've been doing art for a while now, you've been doing your illustrations for a while. There was no need for you to kind of jump on this thing just for the sake of it.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. I think
sorry,
wow, that was amazing. I think yeah, there's definitely, in hindsight, you know, things I wish I'd done better in at that time. Yeah, because I think I bought into the hype as well, and I think
a lot of us did.
Yeah, I'm a bit like upset about it, to be honest. You know, I think that I drank the Kool-Aid, man. I'm annoyed.
Should
about
have
it.
Started the episode with that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a good way to wrap it
but
up.
But we could talk about that for a really long time.
Yeah, it's a whole episode.
NFTs. Yeah. Okay.
Amazing.
Thank you guys so much. It's been such a pleasure. I feel like I've never really...
Here, so we have taco de pescado, cheese, more cheese over there, tostada or something. Yeah, do you like cheese? You know, lactose, honey?
I love cheese.
Let's do it, man. Let's dig in.
That's a great way to end it.
And everybody else, thank you. See you on the next one.
Thanks for tuning in. See you guys.